Now, I want to remind you of a few things because, you know, the four tapes that we had went over such a long period of time. One of them, the first one, I think, was supposed to take place on February 12th out of the four. And you finally got the fourth one a week or two ago. And so some of this may be a little dull in your memory, but I'll remind you of a couple of things because they fit into what I promised to talk about a little bit today, tonight. I want to go back to the beginning of chapter 19. And Moses has gone up on the mountain. God's having a little conversation with him, a nice friendly little conversation, based upon grace. And he says, Moses, I want you to take note of something, and I want you to teach it to the people. I want you to teach them that you've seen how what I did to the Egyptians. You saw how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now, if you will obey my voice and keep the deal that we've made, the covenant, then you're going to be a peculiar treasure unto me above all the people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. All right, then Moses went down the hill, he told the people that, and they took it upon themselves to promise flat out, whatever God says, we will do. And in one sense, that was the grossest sin they could commit. We are going to do it. Not with God's help. If God enables, if God provides, then we will do it. Okay? And this is only the nature of the human being. You know, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Now, I want to point something out. There was one time and one time only in the history of the world that I know of that a nation as such, to the man, to all intents and purposes, was saved. I don't know whether you realize this or not, but when God took Israel as a nation out of Egypt, which represents the world, and sin, he lifted them, took them out by his power. They didn't do anything. God says, I'm going to do it. He literally compelled them to move out of the land of Egypt. They huddled on the shores of the Red Sea in fear. God gave them courage. God divided the Red Sea. They crossed over, and then God handled the Egyptians. God did it all. Grace. No argument. But when they got on the other side of that Red Sea, they were saved individuals. Recognize that. Today, well, I know that in the Sunday school class we referred to them as Christians. They weren't Christians. But they were saved. In God's eyes, they were saved. All right? That terminology is a little different. They weren't Christians because no matter how you want to stress and twist the scriptures, they did not know Christ. All right? They knew the blood sacrifices. The Passover. All right? The door, the blood on the lintel and the sidepost of the door, the sign of the cross, pointed to Christ, but they didn't know Christ. They couldn't. But they knew in faith that if they prepared the Passover the way the Lord prescribed it, if they acted in faith in response to the word, then God would perform his end. It was just as simple as that. If you will respond to the word in faith, that's how you're saved today. It does. Don't let anyone kid you. It requires the blood sacrifice. I'm sorry, I'm going to take that stand. It's all through the scriptures. It can't be wiped out. It takes the blood sacrifice. Christ did shed his blood on the cross of Calvary. Now, I'm sorry, I can't step off of that. I don't care what R.B. Thyme or anyone else writes. Okay? Now, I won't deny that. I'd rather die than do that. And they were saved by the blood sacrifice, the Passover feast. Accepting it and following in obedience through faith. By God's grace. All right? The grace came first. God offered it freely. They accepted it freely and then they obeyed. But when they accepted, they were marked. They were earmarked. And in confusion, literally, they crossed the Red Sea. When they got on the other side, they were saved individuals. Now, they get on the other side as saved individuals. Oh, man, you know, when we become Christians, all of a sudden we get a great deal of confidence. I'm a Christian now. I can do anything. Now, you know, I'm a great one for pointing out the strength that you have, the power that you have at your disposal, the resources of God that belong to you, and I won't change that either. They are yours. But when we stand up and say, we Now, how many times have I told you this? I will do this. Then God says, wait a minute, I'm going to show you, you can't do anything. And that's what happened to Israel. It seems so innocent. You read this, you pass right over it. Moses came down and said, now God says, remember the Passover, remember I took you out of the land of Egypt. I did it. God did it. And now, if you'll follow along the way you followed there, if you'll let me do the work, that was a promise, then I'm going to make you a very special people, a holy nation, a nation of priests. A whole nation, not just one tribe. A priest. You know, that implies your job will be, as we had, and it was right in the Sunday school class this morning, you'll be a nation of priests interceding for the world. Okay? This is great. Great. Now, whatever God says, we will do. That was the sin. We will do. God pulls the curtain down right there. He was open with Moses, open with the people of Israel. All of a sudden, he pulls the curtain down. He says, you put a bound, or put a fence around the mountain. And you tell even the priest and Aaron and all the people that they're not to cross that line, for if they surely do, they shall surely die. Okay? I mean, you say you're going to do it in your strength. I'm putting up the bounds now. You've separated yourselves from me. You're saying what you're going to do can't be done. And I'm going to show you. So then it was thunder and lightnings on the mountains. God's wrath, that's what it represented. And you had, the last time that you met, the giving of the Ten Commandments. Now this is inserted here. It's in the right place. And we go a long ways before Moses actually comes down from the mountains. We go over to, I don't know, chapter 24 or so before Moses comes down from the mountain and breaks those tablets. But it's all one event. Okay? So God says, now, you said that you're going to obey. And once again, now he's speaking to a nation of saved individuals. He says, if you're going to do all I'm going to say, then I'm going to show you just how wrong you can be. Now, this is the purpose of the Ten Commandments, and they belong to the Christian. They belong to the saved individual today. They don't belong to the man on the street. Or they might help him as a moral guideline if he's willing to obey them. But if you want to look at the world out there today, you want to look at some of the things we talked about before the message this morning, the sin on the streets, you'll see that the world doesn't give one hoot for the Ten Commandments. They could care less for their parents. They could care less for the things of God. They worship everything but God. They care not for one another. They will steal and cheat and lie and rob. They will commit adultery. They will murder. The Ten Commandments mean nothing to the unsaved individuals. Therefore, I say to you that the Ten Commandments were given to a nation that were saved to the man. And they're given to the Christians today. There's a purpose in these Ten Commandments. Now, that is not changing the statement to the effect that you are not saved by obeying the commandments. You cannot be saved by obeying the commandments. But they are instruction to the Christian today. The Christian is expected to worship God. The Christian is expected to be honest in his dealings with his neighbor. The Christian is expected to love God. The Christian is expected not to murder, not to commit adultery, not to covet. Go ahead, name them all. That's what's expected of the Christian. Now, you can get down into the subject of the Sabbath, and it's a thing that's a little difficult. But in practice, the Sunday Sabbath, if you look at it, in 6 days God worked and created, and on the seventh day he rested. The simple answer is, I start tomorrow on my 6 days of work. I don't care whether it's Saturday or Sunday. God didn't say Saturday. You work 6 days, and then you rest the seventh. So I go to work tomorrow, and you go home and you go about your task and your work. You start Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and you may lay off a little bit on Saturday and slow down. If you're like me, you go home and you cut the grass and bathe the dog and beat the wife. I mean, you go ahead and take care of the important business of the house. On Sunday, it belongs to the Lord, or should. It belongs to Christian fellowship. It belongs to feasting on the Word of God. It belongs to resting. It's a day of rest. So you can't take it out either, can you? So what part of the Ten Commandments are you going to pull out and throw away? No, don't try to. Don't deny the Ten Commandments. The ultra extremist in certain doctrine that says the commandments don't apply today just doesn't know what he's talking about. They belong to the Jew. The Jew twisted him around and says, now if you're going to be a Jew like us, and there was some talk about how an individual became a Jew, you know, a Gentile could come in, and if he was circumcised and subscribed to the law, then he could become a Jew. Well, that was wrong. And so many churches today say, well, now, if you'll stop beating your wife, like the preacher does. When was the last time I beat him? It was a long time ago. Wasn't it? Yeah. That's about it, yes. If she tells me to. If she tells me to. And reminds me. And threatens me. Then I'll beat her to it. But, you know, if you obey the standards that we have set up, and you're honest and upright in all your dealings with your neighbors, and you pay your tithe every Sunday when you come to church, and you support all the works of the church, then we'll accept you into membership. And that's no different than the Jews were. If you'll ascribe to the law, if you will obey the law, and then you will take circumcision, then we'll accept you as a Jew. And you're a Jew. Well, that's not the way it is. And in a sense, it can be justified in the fact that, well, we say that in order to become a member of the church, you need to be a Christian first. Okay, I'll buy that. Then, as we stated this morning, everything else comes from God. Even the becoming a Christian comes from God. Let him do the changing. I think that professed faith, in the absence of evidence to the contrary, ought to be sufficient for membership in a church body. Upon presentation of evidence to the contrary, consistent living contrary to Christian standards, then the church might think twice about taking an individual into membership. But if a member gives evidence of being saved, if God's using him, they know what they were and what they are, that should be the beginning of sufficient evidence, and therefore they should be acceptable to membership. But the prerequisite is belonging to Christ, belonging to God in Christ, being in Christ, and not the standards that we set. You see, it's too easy to twist it around. Too easy to twist around and say these are prerequisites to becoming a member of the church. And membership in the church is synonymous with being a Christian. There's too many people in the world. You know, if you want to become a Christian, join the church. That's not so. Become a Christian, and then, when you know you're a Christian, join the church. Okay? And the church ought to be prepared to welcome all who will make that profession with open arms. As simple as that. If they're not, then they don't have the Christian love that God prescribes and commands to the Christian. Okay? So, I have fulfilled that which I said I would this morning. Don't let anyone kid you in the sense that the commandments in the law do not belong to the Christian. Now, there are portions of the law that applied to the Israelite, the Hebrew, the Jew, and exclusively to them. And we'll see some of those things. Even in many cases, even these things that are exclusive to the Jew, many of them can be good guides to Gentile living, too. We'll come to some of them in this coming section prior to the time that Moses gets down the hillside. The Ten Commandments, though, are the foundation stone of all law. And I'd say this today. We're getting into trouble in our country and around the world because we have diverged so far in our lawmaking. Everybody's making laws. Everybody. You can't keep up with them. We mentioned the one today in relation to mistreatment of children. Now, morally, you know, if my next-door neighbor, you know, I could hear the beatings and I could see the evidence on the child, I'd pick up the phone and call the cops. And I'd be at the front door with the cops if he wanted me there. And I would gather all the evidence I could to prove what they were doing to that child. Just as simple as that. I think kids are something special. But don't make a law that says I'll be a felon if I suspect the possibility and don't report it. Uh-uh. That's wrong. Next thing you'll say, it'll be a felony if in the next drought I don't report my neighbor who waters his lawn or fills a swimming pool. Or I'll be a felon if I don't report that he doesn't turn his lights off at 9:30 at night if you put that kind of a quarantine on. Okay? That's what is coming. Watch for it. There isn't a thing that you can do to change it except look to your own Christianity and talk to God about it and do your witnessing in every chance that you get. Now, we mentioned the tracts, and it was kind of a half joke, I guess. I know Paul, and I know that he can't write a letter without shoving a handful of tracts in it. And when he shoves a handful of tracts in it, he sends an order downstairs to the folks packing tracts, says, send a box off to them, you know? And bang, they start reaching like this, and they're piled into a box, and they pay the postage, and off it goes. And he's hoping, and he's praying behind those tracts that they'll put to good use. So we kind of kid him, said, put them in your phone bill. Put them in every letter you mail. Put one of those Bible course cards in every letter you mail. Yeah. You don't know where they'll go or where they'll end up. You don't know who they'll reach. You mentioned the lady that you knew, and, you know, I've seen too many times when a witness has come back home. You've heard of something that's reached somebody and done some good, all right? You think about it. Think about all the possibilities you have. You know, you don't have to go out in the street corner and put on a sandwich sign and get somebody to beat a drum, somebody else to blow a trumpet, and make a lot of noise and gather a crowd in order to witness. You don't have to go into a bar or into somebody's house and push somebody back into a corner and accuse them of all kinds of vile things and tell them how bad they are and how badly they need salvation in order to be a witness. Sometimes it's wrong. Now, there are people who have, I think, a special gift that can almost do that. They can take a conversation and gently steer to the things of God and get a witness in almost anytime, anywhere. I think those people are specially blessed. I'm not capable of it. You might be. I suspect we might have one or two in the room who could do that if they put their minds to it and do it right. But there isn't one of us who, and I guess we're just about as bad as anyone else, who couldn't put a simple little tract in every letter that you mail, whether it's a bill. And, you know, I don't know, how many bills do you get at home? Yeah, well, then how many chances is that to witness? You don't know what little clerk is going to be given the job, you know, to slitting that envelope. So you put three tracts into every time, and the bill every time you mail it to the PG&E, if you have that, all right? Oh, I'll guarantee that. Come think, you're right. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's about their works and what they're doing. So, you know, I don't know how many clerks they have opening that mail. But you're going to reach a number of them if you send a track every time you mail your bill. It's going to fall out. They may throw it right in the mail in the wastebasket, and some of them may take a minute, and, you know, it's a good excuse. Oh, look at this. What's it say? Take the time to read it. Huh? Yeah, it's a good chance to loaf for a few minutes. You know, there it is. I've got to read it now, you know. What is this? So you take time to read it. Yeah, think about it. Okay? All right, now, we've used up three-quarters of the time that we had, and we haven't gotten to verse 18 yet, have we? All right. The Ten Commandments, though. This is the Ten Commandments in perspective. Now, and all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, and when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. They didn't need any fences. They didn't need any lines. Oh, you'd have got a kick out of Hawaii. Alice does not like the big island of Hawaii, and if she's honest and will admit to it, she doesn't like it because it's the only island that has active volcanoes on it. Huh? And it stunk. Yeah, well, that's part of being an active volcano, hon. You know, I think when I get angry and I become an active volcano, which I do, you know, that's one of those appetites I have, the appetite of a loose temper. I probably smell bad, too. When we were there, the news was coming on. It's great for Alice. You have to know Alice, you see. I was looking forward. I was hoping that one of those mountains would go. And the guy on the top of one of those mountains in a ranger station said, you know, this is the only place in the world that's like this. Everywhere else, when there's an impending eruption or an eruption beginning, everybody runs away. Here in Hawaii, they all run to the edge of the crater to see what's going on. Well, Alice is one of those that would run away. And I guess I'm one of those nuts that would go run to see what's happening. We passed a number of them and looked at them. And, you know, in the last few years, they've had a number of pretty good lava flows. And some of them were still warm to the touch. You walk over them, your shoes would still begin to feel warm. And sulfur coming up from them, and sulfuric acid and the whole bit, you know. And you could see where they'd flown down over old flows and so forth. And I know how Alice was impressed. She doesn't like that island. She prefers Maui. The volcanoes are all dead there, and there's nothing happening on that island, so she prefers it. Huh? Yeah, well, when we were over on Maui, and we went up on the big volcano there, the news programs were saying, the seismographs indicate the possibility of an eruption. There are movements beginning, and there could be, and Alice, I know, she's, well, I'm sure glad we're off that island, you know. And we talked to the ranger there. He said, yes, it could happen at any time, and you can mark your calendars. He says, the big eruption we expect in the middle of July sometime. The big eruption. So mark your calendars. Let's see if they know what they're talking about. I don't know. But here these people are. The mountain apparently is erupting. There's lightning and thunders and fire and smoke and everything that would go with an eruption. And so the people, they're not rushing up there. They're backing off, and now they're afraid. You see, in their strength, they have said, we will do what God says. And God says, wait a minute. You can't reach up to me. I have reached down to you and offered everything that I have to you. I've offered you honor and glory and holiness and position and power and authority and everything that goes with it. And now you presume to be able to do what I will do through you. And you can't do it. Now I'm going to show you who I am. Here is my mountain, don't you trespass. Here are my things. Here is my holiness, don't you presume. And then he demonstrates his power. And the flesh says, I am weak. Let me get out of here. And off they went. And they said unto Moses, speak thou with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. Now they're coming back to where they belong. If they had thought, before they had opened their big mouths, then they would have thought of the power of God and how little and how useless they were. If they had thought back to Egypt and how they couldn't get out from under the yoke, if they had thought back to the Red Sea and how they were trapped and were doomed, if they had looked and seen what God had done to the Egyptians, and if they had thought about when they were hungry in the desert and God provided the quail and the manna, God provided, God did, then they would have realized when they needed water. God provided the water. God provided, God provided, God did. And all of a sudden, they take it out of God's hands and says, we will. That's wrong. And God says, now wait a minute. You've done it once too often. Here I am. Here's a demonstration of my power. Listen to me. And now, they're fearful little children. Moses, you go up. You know, push him ahead. Get him up there. Let me stay to the back of the line. You know, we'll back you up, Moses, but you go ahead. We'll back you up way back. Moses, you go up and talk to God. We can't face God. We can't look at God. We don't want to hear his voice. We're afraid. We're afraid we'll die. We're fear. Now, Moses said unto the people, fear not, for God is come to prove you or test you. And that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not. God is teaching you a lesson. You don't have to be afraid. Because God isn't going to hurt you now. God is only doing this to teach you a lesson. To teach you to learn to respect his power and his position and what he is in his holiness. Why? So that you will not sin. Now, these people were expected to sin. There's those Ten Commandments. And the appetites of the human body. And the inclination towards sin in the mind of the human being. And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near under the thick darkness where God was. Now, I believe that verse 25 in chapter 19 and verse 18 go together. And that verses 1 through 17 come in about verse 22. Now, this could, my thinking there could be an error. God could have given the Ten Commandments unto Moses verbally. And then at the demonstration of God's power at the end of giving this, that, or in the process of giving these commandments, the fear struck the people and they retreated from the mountain and they, you know, here's Moses up there in the midst of all the eruptions and the thunder and the lightning, and the people down at the bottom of the mountain, you know, if they yelled at the top of their voice, he wasn't about to hear him up there. But the lightest whisper of the child of God, given in fear and respect to God, is heard by God in the midst of all the worst turmoil and disturbance. And so God probably, this is George now, so you put quotes around it, said to Moses, hey, I got the people stirred up, they're fearful, and they're in a proper attitude. Go down and talk to them a little bit. Reassure them. Because he had the word from God when he got down there. He had the answers. Okay? We'll pick up with verse 22 next week, the Lord willing. Be in prayer about it. And I hope I haven't disturbed you thinking too much, but I have. I do hope that I've made you think a little bit about the proper place of the Ten Commandments. Done away with? Yes, in the sense that the consequence of breaking them eternally, the eternal consequences of breaking them, is done away with. But there's still the proper, reasonable guide for Christian conduct. Now, that's all there is to it, and don't let anyone kid you. And I think the Christian ought to reach towards them, point towards them, aim towards them, and try to obey them. Yes?
You said something about a person being accepted into the church should be a Christian first. Mm-hmm. And by that, of course, you mean church membership. You didn't mean that a person couldn't come to church. And
no, I didn't mean that. I'm not talking about fellowship. Membership and fellowship are two different things. Fellowship, I think fellowship ought to be extended to anyone that'll come through that door. But membership is given on the basis of their personal testimony in relation to their association with God. All right. Let's bow our heads for a word of closing prayer. Heavenly Father, we come to Thee with praise and thanksgiving tonight. We thank Thee for all that Thou hast done. We thank Thee for this day and the precious times together. We pray now that You would go with us, that You would lead and guide and direct us, that You'd be very close to us, and Thy presence would be in our consciousness. And then, Father, when it pleases Thee, we will praise Thee and thank Thee for gathering us together again in the time and in the place of Thy choosing, that we might worship and fellowship together. In Jesus' most precious name.